the big British castle. It's time for Adam and Joe to broadcast on the radio. There'll be some music and some random talking in between, and then eventually the whole thing will just end.
Fabulous stuff. That's Talking Heads there with Psycho Killer. Hey, it's Adam and Joe here.
Hey, this is Joe speaking.
Hey, this is Adam speaking.
Do you know some people still can't tell which of us is which?
We do have a similar kind of a cadence to our voices, but you, Joe Cornish...
sounds very accusatory.
...are trained... No, it's complimentary. Oh. ...are trained... A trained Radio 4 speaking...
That's true.
...presenting person.
I had 2 hours of training.
And your voice...
In 2004.
...is very even, always easily heard.
That's nice of you to say.
Whereas mine tends to... fluctuate, skitter around.
People prefer your voice.
I'm not sure that's true.
Ladies think it's sexy.
You know, I was going to talk about this later on, but I was listening to the podcast in the car the other day with my beautiful wife. And over the engine noise, it was very easy to hear everything you said perfectly, beautifully, crystal clear. It was not so easy to hear a lot of what I was saying. Because when I was speaking like this in a kind of normal way, fine, everything's fine. But then when I start shouting, if I get angry about something, which does happen...
It's the exact same frequency as a car engine.
It blows out a little bit, yeah, and it starts interrupting the car engine. The wheels start shuddering. It's like when you wind the window down.
Wheels start shuddering. What, it creates a reverberative effect that...
You know, like when you wind the window down a little bit and you get a kind of Doppler effect.
Yes.
A little bit like that.
A Doppler effect. Is that what it's called?
I don't know. No,
You know, there's a thing if you drive along an avenue in France on a sunny day and there are stroboscopic shadows that pass over your car like that.
Yeah, I do
know. Can make you go a bit mental.
That's true.
Is that the Doppler effect?
I don't know.
Someone will tell us.
Yeah, one of our listeners. The other thing I sometimes do is I speak quite softly. And that's totally inaudible on the podcast over the car noise.
Well, what an idiot hole you are.
This is my
point. How many podcasts now? 90,000?
Something, like 93.
And you've made a complete pig's ear hole of it all?
This is the thing. We've even had letters about this in the past, which I have poo-pooed.
Well, that serves you right for poo-pooing in letters.
Well, I've learned a lesson.
Serves you right for posting your poo-pooing.
The poo-poo came right back at me. And I'm sorry about it, listeners. I'm going to do my best to speak in an even keel.
So, of course, anyone who's listening to this live is a member of Black Squadron, the secret covert elite listening force that this show enjoys. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, because you're up at an ungodly hour, which is 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
On the day the world ends.
Exactly. 2012, I thought.
Yeah. No, it's just very grey and rainy and dark here in London. There's an apocalyptic feeling in the air.
It is, absolutely. Mel Gibbons out
but
there.
But, of course, last week we had the very capable Justin Lee Collins and Andrew Dice Clay filling in for us, right?
Yeah, their real
Collins
names
and Herring.
Are Collins and Herring, Andrew Collins and Richard Herring.
And they did a superb job. Thank you very much to them.
Yeah, we were honoured, you know. We're always... I'm just overcome with emotion. We were really honoured that they stepped in to fill in for us. You know, we always have amazing...
Yeah, that's classy, Depping.
Amazing people Depping for us.
But they issued a Black Squadron command, and their command was to send in a photo of yourself... visually approximating you and I, Adam
right,
and Joe.
Right.
So I guess a lanky one and a beardy one.
Oh, thanks.
And it's not insulting to say you're beardy. You've got a beard.
Listen, I was genuine thanks because I thought maybe you would go for other physical characteristics. There you go.
Long and stumpy. and they got 18 responses.
Yeah.
So you know what? I mean, for them, that's disappointing. But for me, for Black Squadron, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because the majority of Black Squadron said, no, we're not taking orders from... these substitute leaders.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? No, not any old person can swan in and give us an order. It's got to come from Count Buckley's and Torpedo Commander Cornballs.
Decorated ranking
officers.
Yeah,
exactly. So in a way, congratulations to those 18 people who sent in photos of themselves as us. But in another way...
How dare you! You've been court-martialed. Get out of the squadron.
Because the previous week, when our abstract Black Squadron command was Problem Biscuits, we had 121 responses.
They were very good as well. That was quite an abstract command and required a lot of thinking
from
the squadron.
There is going to be another command in a second. It's a simpler command. It's a slightly artistic command.
Mm-hmm.
And we must warn you at this stage to use non-toxic pens.
Ooh.
Be very careful what pen you use to execute the command. We take no responsibility for the ink that you use.
No.
And the effect it might have
yeah.
on you when you do the command.
Immediately after Joe issues the command, we will be playing some music from Mariachi El Bronx, a track called Litigation. What do we know about this? They're a US punk band, also known as The Bronx. This is from their fourth studio album, released in September of this year. They're on tour in the UK. I've never heard of these people, James. You can't just spring these people on us. I mean, there's a picture of them apparently in the...
He's got no pants on.
Is
in
he
the
on
picture?
The lav? Are they all
no,
stuffed
he's
in
got
a...
no pants, but he's protecting his modesty with his hand.
He's on the lav. They're in a cubicle. They're all crowded into a lavy cubicle. That's exactly what you'd expect from the US punk band, also known as The Bronx. And as soon as Joe issues the command, we will fire into Mariachi El Bronx. Joe.
It's a photo command, of course. We're asking you to obey the command and then take a photo of the results of your abation. Is that a word?
It is now.
Abadatory.
Abation.
And the number is 64046. That's the text number. The email is adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk. Text will be charged at the standard call rate. Yeah, I'm just making that up.
You
no one's
it.
Told me to say that.
All right, Dermot.
This is the kind of thing that people say. Is that good, James?
It's very good.
And you must be prepared for it to be published on a blog which is accessed by billions of people internationally, right?
That's
a slight exaggeration.
Yeah.
But it's worth saying anyway. Are we ready then?
Yeah.
Stand by, Black Squadron. Here is your command. Felt pen tattoo! It's described as a punk band here. Does that sound punky to you?
Well, it's sort of...
sounded quite polished.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's not what punk's all about.
Isn't it?
No,
has the meaning of
not.
The word changed a bit?
Punk, I mean, it covers a whole range of things, doesn't it? I mean, originally, punk is just a kind of a sneer. It's a word that's been around for hundreds of years. And it was really only used...
Tell us a bit about the history of the word punk.
Well,
starting now.
It was William Shakespeare that first coined the word punk to describe some of the bands that were coming
and
out
finishing
of
now.
New York in the 70s.
Thanks. Good.
Some fun facts about punk for you there, listeners. So how are you doing, listeners? How's your week been? How's your week been, Joe?
It's been all right, thanks very much.
The big thing that happened to me that got me very excited while we were away, because we've been away for a couple of weeks, in case you didn't know, was that we got a message through. We've got different agents, myself and Joe, but my agent sent a message through that got me quite excited, because usually you get a lot of requests through in the week. I mean, I get hundreds.
You do, don't
hundreds
you?
Hundreds and hundreds.
Will you empty this dustbin?
Yeah.
Will you empty that dustbin?
These weeds.
Why
are
haven't you emptied
unruly.
That dustbin?
Exactly. What are these crumbs doing around
what
the
are all
bread
those
bin?
Dustbin bags
Could
doing
you come back
around
and
that lamp
sweep
post?
Up? The children need bathing. When will you be home? That kind of thing. So it was exciting to get a message that was titled Stella McCartney Request.
Yes.
From my agent, right?
Oh, I was thinking about this the other day.
And so I thought, what the heckins? And I thought, it's going to be some, like, you know, boring PR circular or something like that. So click on the message. It's only an invitation from Stella to turn on the lights in her Stella shop for an invited audience of around 300 family and friends.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine the kind of family and friends that will be present at Stella McCartney's Christmas light shop opening switching on ceremony? I mean, last year she had Peter Kay doing the honours, right? Peter Kay started by singing a couple of numbers in his Peter Kay way with Paul McCartney. The year before that, she had, I think, Matt and Dave from Little Britain. In the past, she's had the Fast Show guys turning on the lights. This is illustrious company, right? And she is asking us. So I immediately think, like, maybe there's been some mistake and someone's pulled out at the last minute. No, she was. This is a genuine ask, right? For me and Joe to do this for Stella. And so I said, yeah, I'm up for it if Joe is. Joe wasn't up for it.
You know what? I didn't really think about it that much. All I thought about was how paralytically excruciating I would find it to stand up in yeah. front of those people and sing some Song Wars song.
Here's the thing. And I then, probably would too.
Well, you know what? About a week later, yeah. I suddenly realised, well, maybe Paul McCartney would have been there.
Why didn't you
seriously,
read the rest
about
of the
a
email?
Week later, that popped into my head. But then I thought, well, is that the right motivation for doing it? Should one really do something like that just because I want to, like, schmooze with amazing.
It's not a question of schmoozing.
People.
She herself is a legendary fashion designer.
Yes.
Her father happens to be one of the most influential.
Yeah,
and
but is that the right reason to do something?
Yes.
Yes.
In this case, yes.
Yes. What would one hope to get from it?
An anecdote.
That's
to
true.
To tell your children.
Would you want to be invited? Would you want to make friends with them? Would you? What would be your fantasies the night before?
Well, obviously the fantasy is that you all get on very well in a lifelong
and then you
friendship
become a friend of the starts. McCartneys.
Yeah, exactly. That's the fantasy. But worst case scenario, it's an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
You and I humiliate ourselves.
Yes.
There's absolute silence.
Yes.
Guy Ritchie rushes over and punches you
yes
for inadvertently
why
insulting
is that the worst
Stella
case scenario?
But
this is an excellent scenario.
Paul McCartney is livid about how inadvertently rude we've been about Stella's latest clothing range. He runs over, lamps me in the
you
face.
You would love that.
Says that I'm never allowed to listen to a Beatles record ever
just
again in my life.
Touching you would be amazing.
Stella McCartney starts crying and has us banned.
I tell you what would happen. We'd turn up and it would be another woman called Stella McCartney.
Yeah, who designed
and
socks.
All her friends, yeah. That's what would happen.
Here's the thing. Here's the punchline, right? Guess who they've got to replace us?
You.
Do you know?
On your own.
Do you
I don't.
You don't?
No.
The Mighty Boosh.
Ah, there you go.
I mean, that's not bad, is it?
They'll be great.
Of course they'll be great. They'll be
yeah
they'll be a lot better than we.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed she didn't go to them first. Maybe she did and they weren't able to do it. But I don't know if they are actually doing it. I don't know if they've said yes, but I probably shouldn't even be talking about any of this.
You probably shouldn't be talking about it. I'm never going to get asked again.
No, exactly. But anyway,
well, I'm sorry, man.
That's okay.
I mean, I'm going to take a lot of kicking from the listeners, probably, for that decision.
Yeah, maybe.
Something felt a bit wonky about it.
I know, you're probably right.
I'd definitely go around to Dindin's.
Oh, would you?
Yeah, but if there's like a public show, then I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, we were going to be like kind of performing monkeys, but I would have been absolutely fine with that.
You should have done it on your own.
I offered.
I tell you what you
they
should do.
They didn't want me on my own. They said they were after a double
there should
act
be some kind of stand-in for me that's who's got more chutzpah.
A big kind of
chutzpah corns.
Cardboard cutout.
Yeah, that's all I do anyway.
Yeah.
No one would notice the difference.
Come on. Here's a free play for you, listeners. I've been enjoying Devendra Banhart's new album. He's a kind of stylistic magpie, particularly on this record. Like, usually he does his warbly folk thing. But on this one, it's like he's going through every kind of musical style he can think of and doing a pretty good job of making lovely tunes out of them. Here's his Cod Reggae number, which is pretty good. You like Cod Reggae, right?
What sort of a thing is that to say?
You do! You've come in before and said, I love Cod Reggae, let's have some Cod Reggae.
Have I?
Yes!
And what did I play?
Well, in that instance, I think you played some real reggae, but I mean, maybe you played Musical Youth, which is somewhere in between.
There's a really terrible Jamiroquai Cod Reggae track that
right
I like for humorous reasons.
I love Cod Reggae.
Called Sailing Along.
I like Thomas Dolby's Cod Reggae. I like Joe Jackson's Cod Reggae. And here's some Devendra Banhart Cod Reggae. This is Foolin'. What's a skindy?
It's skindy. Skindiana Jones.
Oh.
He's a very badly sunburnt
And he comes after you. Why do you have to watch out for him?
Because you've got an icon in your pocket.
Oh, I see.
Listen, we've had an amazing response to the Black Squadron command, which was felt pen tattoo. You know, I don't know where to start. We've had lots and lots of pictures. Nipples, bums, thighs,
mm-hmm,
shoulders.
You didn't show me the nipples once.
Well, it's a man's nipple.
Oh.
There it is.
Well, there's a lady has written a made-up joke on her back, even. And it's not a good made-up
joke. Give her a name check. Is her name there?
She hasn't written her name.
A lot of them are anonymous.
Well, the photo only goes down to her buttocks, so her name may be written in another world that we can't see in this photograph. It says, I love Adam and Joe. Made-up joke. What does Father Christmas say when he eats sweet corn? Ho, 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 green giant.
Somebody's written Adam and Joe on the side of a horse.
Is that cool?
Yeah. I don't know whether that's cool. I don't know whether that's something we should encourage. I would hope it's a kind of organic ink they've used.
Yeah.
But let's assume it is, in which case, yes, it's cool.
Horse graffiti.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get much
horse
graffiti.
It's not a horse in a field. It's obviously the person's horse.
Yeah.
It could be Noggins. The Adam and Joe horse.
Absolutely. Because you wouldn't want to encourage animal graffiti, would you?
No.
Is that something that kids generally yeah stop at that, don't they? Do they? Not?
I don't know. It's certainly, you're right, it's not to be encouraged.
No.
But thank you to everyone who sent a photo in. That's fantastic. I mean, there's so many, it's hard to pick which one to choose. But obviously we didn't prescribe what to tattoo
mm-hmm
on the body. So lots of, some people have drawn our faces and drawn nice messages about the show. Other people have written more disturbing things in more disturbing ways. But of course, the acceptable highlights of those photos will go up on our blog as soon as possible, and we will count them up for the end of the show. Or next week, we'll give a number count and see exactly how many fully qualified Black Squadron members are out there.
Because you love stats.
I love stats.
You absolutely love stats.
They call me Stato.
Johnny Graffface.
Johnny Graffface.
That's not a good name. I'm not saying it's a brilliant name for you. That's what they call you.
Yeah.
Because you love graphs and stats. It is 9:30 here on BBC Six Music. It's time for the news.
So I was just pointing out that we haven't stood down Black Squadron and suggesting that we play the jingle to stand them down. James Sterling, the producer, Adam Buxton, seemed to think we didn't need to do that. That we could let that slide, you know?
We didn't play the Stand to Attention jingle at the beginning of the show.
As a Black Squadron commander, I feel strongly that we should play the jingle, you know?
Right.
It's like the Manchurian candidate. We've got to deactivate them, otherwise God knows what will happen for the rest of the day.
They'll all just carry on tattooing.
They have to be stood down.
Start tattooing strangers, yeah. Going up to old ladies,
dangerous.
Tattooing them in the face.
Dangerous.
Yeah, sure. Okay, fair enough.
Stand them down.
Tattooing babies.
Stand down, your work is done. You've earned yourself a nice warm bath and maybe a nice little bun.
That's better.
There you go. That's better. Incidentally, just before that, we played Do You Remember the First Time? That was Pulp, of course, from way back in 1994. Jarvis Cocker, ex of Pulp, will take over Sunday afternoons here at BBC Six Music. He's going to be on from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. from the 10th of January 2010.
Wow.
That we make contact.
That'll be cool.
That'll be amazing.
I saw him at the Fantastic Mr. Fox premiere thing.
He's,
at the London Film Festival.
He plays a part
Festival.
In it, doesn't he? Yeah.
He does. He sings a little song and there's an animated version of him. And I saw him there with his little son, Mini Jarvis, dressed just like him. And I very nearly went over and talked to him.
He's a very nice man.
Yeah, apparently. Because I thought the Six Music thing could get me in there.
Right.
You know? Hey, I'm a fellow DJ.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
No.
No. Good story?
That is a good story, yeah. Thanks. I mean, this is how all our celebrity stories are ending, though, now, isn't it? I could have done, but I didn't.
But I didn't. that could be the our biog.
Yeah, that's right, the Adam and Joe
What's
story.
What's Ant and Dec's one called?
We could have done, but we didn't.
Ant and Dec's biog is called What a Lovely Pair.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
That's just about right, though, isn't it?
Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cheeky, it's fun, it's sexually exciting.
Yeah.
And
it's an innuendo, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are a lovely pair, though, I do. Hey, it's nearly... Is it this weekend, even? Is I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here?
No, nobody knows or cares apart from you. Oh, God.
I swear. What's my life come to? I'm genuinely excited about that show coming back. And I know that's sort of indefensible, and right-thinking people a lot of the time find that show moronic and not easy to watch. I think you're one of those people, aren't you, Joe?
Yep.
But I absolutely love it.
Really?
Me and my wife, we genuinely love it. Like, we fall in love again every year when that show comes on. We sit there, we look at each other in the eyes. I love you, darling. I love you too, darling. And then it starts, Ant and Dec come on, and we just hug each other and quake and cry and laugh. and then we talk about it afterwards, have a little deconstruction. Oh, at first I thought the celebrities they got on looked like a boring lot. How could they get drama out of this bunch of no-hopers? But then it got exciting, and by Tuesday I was hooked. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we chat to each other about all that stuff. Can't wait!
I really don't know what to say.
You like some of those kind of things, though. You like a lot of... You like the X Factor, right?
I like it before they go into the studio.
Oh, yeah, that's what everyone says.
Yeah, well, I agree with everyone.
You kowtow to everyone. Music right now. This is Regina Spektor. Is it Regina? Yeah, or Regina. I like to say Regina. This is Eat. There we go.
We let that one fade all the way out.
No, because she was still doing stuff.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, she was going...
Yeah, well, that's important. That's very important.
That's what she's known for, Regina. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Last weekend, we went to visit some friends, and we had a long drive, me and my family, about 4 hours or something. So I loaded up. I made a compilation for the car, right? You've got to do that. Got myself.
Who are these friends? Where did they live?
They lived over in Sussex.
Okay. So from Norfolk to Sussex?
Yeah, 4 hours.
4 hours.
Henrietta and Jason we went to visit.
Oh, they're lovely.
They are lovely, and we don't see nearly enough of them.
No, so I've never seen them, I don't think. Have I?
You may have done, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's very handsome, she's very attractive, and they wouldn't really have anything to say to you.
No, that's me.
Oh.
You're confusing them with me and my girlfriend.
Anyway, so we went to see them, loaded up work, did the compilation for the car, and burnt off a few podcasts, right, from the show. Because my wife generally doesn't get to listen, because she's always doing bits and pieces with the children, she's too busy on a Saturday morning, etc. And she certainly doesn't download the podcast. So I like to keep her abreast of what I'm actually doing with my Saturday mornings. Also, it's a nice
opportunity. So 4 hours in the car listening to yourself.
Yeah.
Chuckling along really loudly.
Wow, here's the thing. I didn't get to chuckle along that much because she was so busy chuckling along at everything you said.
Ah, oh, nice. Clever woman.
Right? Every single thing you said. Snorts sometimes. There were snorts. Right? Chuckling away.
Always liked your wife.
And then, right, we get to Retro Textination on the podcast.
Yes.
She is singing along with the flipping Retro Textination jingle that Joe done. And then throughout the rest of the day, she's singing the jingle,
yes,
like
she's
to herself.
Clever.
Wandering around
she's
the
really
house.
Bright.
Retro Textination's here. Unbelievable. And like, so a couple of times she caught herself doing it when I was looking at her, and she could see that I was actually genuinely a little bit disturbed by it. So she had to stop herself doing it, you know, but she couldn't stop. It became like a problem for herself. It's ridiculous. Should we hear what she was singing?
Sure.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration, because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared, because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out, instead of thrown in the bin and forgotten about.
Letting it fade out.
Yeah, it's important.
Jeez.
You know, we should credit James Richards, the gentleman that did the piano for that.
Yeah. He didn't even do the music for that.
I didn't
My
know.
Wife.
That's pretty much down to James, any power that has.
Yeah.
But your wife, you know, she has to live with you so she can fully contextualize your comments. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Like, things are funnier and better coming from people who you don't really know the reality about.
Of course, I know.
I'm an escape for her. You're a dreadful man prison. Fleshy bars.
I am, it's true.
Mental chains.
Rolls, horizontal roll bars on my tummy. That's what I've got.
But listen, it's time for Retro Tech.
What? I was trying to switch the image from rolls of fat to a six-pack.
It's Retro Textination time. This is the part of the show where we read out your contributions to the previous week's Text the Nation subject, even though, of course, Collings and Heron were filling in for us last week. So this is a two-week-old Text the Nation. This is the Text the Nation we had about furious arguments that arise during family games.
Yeah, it's so old and confusing that I haven't got a single one.
Don't you?
No, I totally forgot to fill them out.
I've only got two.
Have you? Well, that's good.
Well, that's good. It's brief.
Yeah.
All right, this is from Scott Innes, rhymes with Guinness. My granddad is entirely unable to admit when he's wrong. This came to a head during a Christmas game of Trivial Pursuit some years back. Asked to name the capital of Saudi Arabia, answer, Riyadh, he smiled slyly and claimed that this was a trick question. There was no capital city. He was shouted down by everyone else, but refused to accept that the answer on the card was correct. It must be out of date, he claimed. When told to stop being silly and accept it, that he'd got it wrong, he left the room and returned wielding an atlas. He leafed through it until he found the right page. There was silence for a moment before he shut the book and said, well, the atlas is wrong too.
Good
one. Sat in near silence for the remainder of the night.
Good for him, man.
That's good dad behavior, isn't
it? Yeah, the atlas is wrong.
The world is wrong.
This is a stupid atlas. Out of date.
Dad.
What do you do when fact-checking needs to be done? If you're having a Barney with your wife, are you immediately on Google there?
Well, of course, technology's changed that, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Enormously over the last decade. Yeah. My girlfriend tends to, boot up the laptop at the drop of a hat.
Oh, she's the one that does it?
Yeah, she'll have one. Wi-Fi installed in her brain as soon as it's possible.
That's what I do as well, and my wife's eyes, oh, there you go, you're booting up Google, aren't you? As soon as there's any disagreement, I don't think that's the case, darling. No, I think it is. Well, let's just find out.
Yeah, well, one more, here's one more. Dear Adam and Joe, this is from Fran in Poole. My auntie has very long hair. When she used to play Monopoly with my dad and my other auntie as children, a sweep of the hair would brush all the houses and pieces off the board, and the game would have to come to an end and be declared a draw.
This is the thing I was talking about.
It's a good technique, don't you think?
Yeah, sure.
Just wipe it all off the board if you're losing. Oh, dear. Swoosh.
I remember, actually, although I can't credit it, there was another message from someone who got in a stake playing Monopoly, and they got the car piece out of the box and just drove it all over the board, saying, Boy Racer! Boy Racer! Knocking all the hotels.
That's a clever idea. Do you know Ridley Scott's new film is Monopoly?
No.
The Hasbro, the company that make, I'm not sure whether they make Monopoly, but they make all those games. They've been trotting around Hollywood for the last year or so, selling all the rights, trying to develop movies out of Risk. I'm not sure whether they've got a Kaplunk one on the go yet, but it's only a matter of time. Connect but definitely four. Risk is up and running.
You'll direct the Connect 4 one, right?
I'd love to direct the Connect 4 one. Wouldn't that be good? It would be a terrorist thriller. And they'd be explosive chips.
Yeah, and the explosive chips and a huge kind of Golden Gate Bridge
underneath.
It would
be like Die Hard 3, you know, when they're running. Because Die Hard 3 is a bit like a game show anyway. When they're running around New York.
Yes.
Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson trying to solve. Who's the villain? What's his name?
Oh, Cornelius Plunkface.
What's the actor? Jeremy Irons.
Irons, yeah.
They're trying to solve his riddles. So it's like that old TV game show, 3-2-1. Uh-huh. As a kind of explosive thriller. That's what it would be like.
Very good. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Who's going to be... So he's going to get Rusty Crowe in Monopoly.
Yeah, Ridley Scott directing the Monopoly film. And there's stuff about it online, how he's saying he's going to be true to the board game. As if it's like a great novel where you have to stick to the characters. How there's going to be a man in a little car and a top hat.
And just a big walking top hat on its own and a boot.
But which city will he set it in? Because it's regional Monopoly, isn't it? Depending on where you live, you can get it for your city, right?
Yes, of course.
Answer me that.
He could set it anywhere. He could set it in space. I've got the limited edition Star Wars Monopoly. That's all set in the Star Wars universe. Yeah. He could do it anywhere he wants. He could do it up his bum. You got a free play right now.
I do. I'm just being completely silenced by that comment.
Because it's such a good idea. RSA are going to be on that.
What is my free play?
Hey, Riddles.
This is something you burnt off for me, Adam. How do you say this chap's name?
Marcos Valle.
Marcos Valle, and he's a Brazilian singer-songwriter, correct?
Yeah.
And he's pretty popular over there in Brazil and also all around the world. This is from his album, oh dear, Previsão do Tempo. What does that mean? You're Spanish.
Previsão do Tempo. He's Brazilian, I think.
Yeah, but you're Spanish.
Yeah. I don't know what that means. Something about time. But this is a classic album of his.
Yeah, all his stuff is lovely.
Some of his stuff is a bit more cheesy, riffic.
Did you know that he wrote the music for Via Sésamo, Brazil's version of Sesame Street?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he's a bit of a genius, this guy. Check this out. This is called Tira Ameo.
Very nice. That's the Yeah Yeah Yeahs from their album It's Blitz. One of my albums of the year, Joe.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah. And that was called Off... No, Heads with the... Off. Heads will roll. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. I don't know if I said that already, but it is. And I was complaining a little bit about my wife's obsession with Joe's retro Text the Nation jingle. The thing that gets me, right, is that I get a certain... You know, I do a lot of jingles, right? I pump out the jingles. And as I have admitted many times before on this show, and I think both of us do this, we use a lot of stuff that is supplied by GarageBand and other kind of music-creating programs like Logic and stuff.
Well, because they're clearance-free loops, right?
Clearance-free loops, but not only the loops.
Anyone
sometimes
can use them.
Sometimes we sing over the prepackaged jingles that you get in there as well, right? Not that often, but every now and again. Mm. And we're always fairly upfront about it when we do. But that doesn't stop people emailing in and pointing out the fact as if they've just rumbled us Milli Vanilli style. And it drives me insane! Especially when
There's also an avalanche of praise for Joe's retro Texanation jingle, which is just a never-ending avalanche. And I'm kind of like caught up in the huge snowball of praise that comes in every week. And meanwhile, I get smacked in the face for doing my best to create new exciting jingle jungles for people. For example, here's something that podcast-only listeners will have heard thus far, which I created for last week's podcast while we were away. We did a special bespoke podcast.
Yeah.
And here's a little Bowie-influenced thing that I created for it.
In a magical forest sit a couple of gnomes.
One is called Adam, the other's called Joe.
They're doing a podcast for trees and for stones.
It's not just for stones or just for trees, though of course they're the big podcast fans. It's also for Pixies and Dinosaur Jr. and other reformed indie bands. But the number one fan is the Goblin King. His name is Jared. Listen close, you can hear him sing. Was. I love Adam and Joe. Their theatricality is so superlative. I like listening with Brian Eno. But they never read my texts or made up jokes out, even though they're amusing. So what's that about? Anyway, was.
Bit of Bowie-based fun there. That was exclusive to our podcast last week. Don't forget, the podcast, of course, is available to download on a Monday evening, usually.
So what's the idea there? Because that was framed with a point, wasn't it?
It was framed with the point that we got a message from Charlie in Godalming, right? Mm. He says, "When I listened to your new jingle, Adam, the song I heard in the background was so familiar that I spent the good part of 3 minutes trying to remember where I'd heard it. Then I remembered, as I'm a fan of the collegehumor.com website, and one of their videos had the exact same piece of music in the background. So basically," he says, "you've just taken a demo song and sung over it. Risking coming off rude here, but even though I enjoyed it, I would have expected more effort from you, ? Charlie Godalming."
I agree with Charlie.
Little kiss. After the smack.
Little punishing kiss.
Little smack.
I agree with him. What are you doing? Why didn't you play the accordion yourself and the xylophone and also all the instruments? Why didn't you compose that tune, you lazy old rag bag?
Adam Buxton replies, "At the risk of overreacting here, right, and sounding a little bit defensive, I just want to clarify a couple of things for people like Charlie and Godalming. I am the Morrissey to Garage Band stroke Logic's Johnny Marr, okay? I do the lyrics and the singing."
You're reading this.
"For these jingles." This is my prepared statement.
This argument.
This is a prepared statement. "I do the lyrics and the singing, and the software supplies the tunes, as we've made clear on a number of occasions, including just before the Bowie song, when I said on the podcast I got it off Logic. I still spent a good few hours writing the words, singing, and producing that track, as well as the other jingle jungles."
What's the producing? Go into more details about the producing.
"Putting like echoes on and stuff, and layering up all the voices.
Yeah, that's
panning
producing.
Some of them
that's
to the
cool.
left
that's
and
cool.
panning some of them to the
yep.
right.
Yep.
That kind of thing. Okay. Meanwhile, let's not forget, Cornballs is getting sent backing tracks by piano geniuses for his freaking retro Texanation jingle. Yes, and all he has to do is sit back and just luxuriate and rub himself in the fan mail. What's that?
Rub himself in the fan mail.
Yeah, use it as like moisturizer.
I do bathe in it.
You do, don't you? Mm. You just lie there and pour boiling water in and wait till the fan mail turns into a kind of sludgy lather and then you wash your hair in it.
Yes.
I know you. So, you know, I don't want to read any more of these messages is what I'm saying.
You don't want anyone else to write it to complain.
No.
That could be a blanket policy for the program. only praiseworthy email will get through.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a filter we could apply usefully?
Well, I mean, it seems a little undemocratic, doesn't it? But yes.
I don't know. Yes. Negative mail will be filtered out.
Filtered out, negative mail. Here's some music. This is The Strokes with Last Night. Ah, that is good, isn't it? Last Night by The Strokes. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. I think it's time we jumped into Text the Nation this week. Here's the jingle.
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
And Text the Nation this week, listeners, was cleverly set up on our blog while we were away.
Yeah.
It's all about ways, things that happen that convince you you're psychic, or friends you know who think they're psychic.
I think we said in the podcast that the title was, I Think I'm Psychic Because.
Yeah. Now, I was doing some Twitter searching.
Ah, you love that.
I like to Twitter search.
You're not actually on Twitter.
Yeah.
You just surf for references to us.
Yep. Is that strange to you?
Yeah.
Not necessarily just references to us. Yeah. I search all sorts of different things.
Right.
It's a good way to see what people are chit-chatting about. Sure. And what they're thinking.
It's like a search engine for opinion.
Yeah, but I noticed that our Text the Nation subject had caught the attention of certain psychics.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And what's the woman's name? What does the ghost programs?
Yvette Fielding. Tina Scary.
Like, I think Yvette Fielding, or I don't know, maybe I was getting confused, but it seemed to me that Yvette Fielding had picked up on this.
No.
And anyway, I came away from my late night Twitter search with the impression that a lot of professional psychic bodies,
Derek Acora,
are going to be listening to this segment of the show.
Whoa.
In order to shore up their psychic beliefs.
Sure.
So, is that exciting?
That is exciting.
But I'm sorry to disappoint them, but you know, we're after really idiotic examples of psychosity, aren't we?
Not necessarily.
Are we? No, that's not true.
No. They can be real. Like, how are you on psychic abilities? Do you believe in them?
Do I believe in them?
In the power of the mind?
No.
Do you not?
No.
Not having the power of the mind?
No, I don't believe that people have a controllable psychic power.
The power of the mind.
Not
you know,
really.
If there's one X-Files type thing I do have some credence in, it's the power of the mind.
I believe in coincidence.
Right.
I believe that the subconscious is much cleverer than the conscious.
Oh.
And sometimes it throws you a bone.
Does it?
Do you know what I mean? Who was that? Snuffling at the bottom of the door. It's gone away now, whatever it was.
It's gone.
But do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Cognitive dissonance.
Yes, you're right, of course, you're right. It's the power of suggestion mainly, isn't it, and the way your mind works, and then it sort of works retroactively to make you think something spooky's happening.
Yeah.
But let's hear what the listeners
But you know suggested. What? I mean, this is based on a good friend of mine who reckons he's psychic, this idea, and various things happened. For instance, we were sitting on the sofa watching a televised greyhound betting channel.
Mm-hmm.
Ever seen those?
No.
You phone in and you put your bet on the digital greyhounds, and anyway, he guessed which greyhound would win.
Right.
5 times in a row.
Did he?
And while he was doing that, he was going, I'm psychic. I'm psychic. I'm psychic. I'm going to do it again. I'm psychic. Okay, if it works this time, I'm definitely psychic. Oh my God, I'm psychic. I'm going to do it again. I'm psychic. And then he really couldn't let this go. And it was clear that in a bit of his brain, he really did think he... I mean, maybe he is. Maybe I'm wrong to poo-poo him.
Mm.
But he really seemed to think he was psychic. Then,
careful with the poo-poo.
A couple of weeks later, he came in to my house again and said that a friend of his had offered him a pack of cards. And he had just randomly guessed... He'd picked a card. He'd randomly guessed what it was. He got it right.
Is this Darren Brown we're talking about here?
It's not. No, this is not a professional magician man. This is a normal man that works in a cinema. So he's really...
whose brain is infected with fantasy.
And you know, it's a joke and he smiles, but you can see in his eyes that
really
somewhere deep down he really thinks, oh my God,
yeah,
it could be me.
I know.
So that's the kind of thing I was after. Sure. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I was talking in the podcast last week about my sister who went through a phase of thinking that she was blowing light bulbs with her mind.
I got another one. Mm-hmm. Okay, we were on holiday. I had a big argument. Me and my girlfriend had a bit of an argument on holiday. You
happens.
Know, that happens. As our argument was reaching its peak, we were having an argument on a terrace overlooking a road. As the argument reached its peak...
He threw her over into the road.
No, a man on his moped just crashed right beneath us at the exact moment.
Like it was the Fury.
Like the Fury or Carrie, yeah. He just came off his bike. And it was so
energy.
As if the psychic energy had pushed him off his bike.
Yeah.
And then a little, you know, lump of my in the back of my brain was going, Carrie White, Carrie White, creepy Carrie!
I believe in that stuff a little bit. I think you can get psychic energy.
Do you think?
Yes.
Just the power of vibes.
The vibes.
I mean, I should add that he'd hit an oncoming car.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was just pushed off by an invisible force.
It's more prosaic, isn't it? Like, in when you get arguments, that tends to make people behave irrationally in lots of other ways and pay less attention to what they should be doing. I saw some great road rage yesterday. It nearly kicked off.
Oh, is this psychic?
Time. No, this is a diversion, and we'll ignore it. But let's read out some messages right
now. That's good. We're not usually that professional.
I know. Sorry
about that. Not to tangentialise like that.
Well, it's an annoying thing. It was amazing. And
this is... bump it till later. Tell us about it a bit later.
Sure, sure. Ian in Wimbledon sent in this. He actually posted this. He sent this in. I'm sorry. And he says, "Hi, Cornballs and Count Buckulees. Back in the 1990s, I worked on a teen mag and I was invited to a press screening of the Tom Hanks astro vehicle Apollo 13.
What a great privilege.
Yeah. It was held in a screening room at London's Planet Hollywood.
Oh.
Ooh, privilege upon privilege.
Mini hamburgers.
And was organised in conjunction with Sega, the games company, who were promoting their new Sega Saturn console at the time.
Ooh.
On entry to the cinema, guests were handed a raffle ticket and one lucky winner would go home with a full-length and completely horrible branded leather jacket. Only five in the world, they reckoned. Five too many, really. Anyway, my immediate thought on being handed the ticket was, Christ, I've won this stupid thing. I'm going to have to get up in front of this room of strangers and go up on the stage, pick up this nasty jacket, and then I'm going to go to the pub tonight, so I'll have to cart it around with me. What a pain. So this is all just as he's been handed the ticket, right?
Yeah.
So I sat down at the end of the row to ease my journey up on stage, while Matey from Sega gave us some flim-flam about how great this computer game was, blah, blah, blah. I was desperate for him to get on with it and put me out of my misery, and was halfway out of my seat when he picked the raffle ticket out. So when he read out a different number to mine, I thought, surely some mistake. I know I've won it. At that point, some other bloke on stage whispered in the guy's ear, Sega man's ear, and then the Sega man said, sorry, we'll have to draw again. He picked my number out.
Wow.
I had to carry the stupid jacket with me all night, and eventually I gave it to my uncle for Christmas. Bye, Ian from Wimbledon. So that's pretty weird. He absolutely knew it was going to happen, everything about it, and he just thought, oh, this is a done deal.
That's powerful. How do you explain that kind of thing?
Luck.
Thanks a lot. Bye. So this is what we want from you, listeners, is your idiotic moments when you've thought you're psychic, or good moments if they're really good. You know, 64046 is the text number. You can email adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk. We've got one or two others we had in during the week, but maybe we'll read them out a bit later. Here's a bit of music. This is Florence and the Machine with You've Got the Love.
She's a flowy, billowy dress lady.
I like her.
I like her.
I tried to pet her, but I crushed her.
I crushed her, stamped on it.
Oh, dear.
I tried to blow it, but I popped it.
That was Florence and the Machine we're talking about there. I've got a free play coming up now, listeners. And for you, I have chosen a track by a lady called Melanie. And she is intimately associated with the flower power era of singing.
Yeah, what was her big hit?
Oh,
didn't she have a big hit, Melanie?
It's something like Mama, Look What They've Done to My Tune or something.
Yeah,
like
that was one of the first records I ever heard, I think.
Oh, really?
A tiny, tiny child, yeah.
It's good. My friend Danny Richards turned me on to Melanie, and she's good in an insipid way. I'm going to play a song about vegetarianism that she's written called I Don't Eat Animals. And your brother's a vegan, right? Is he still a vegan, Joe?
Yeah.
And have you ever been tempted to go veggie?
While I was away the last 2 weeks, I thought about it a bit. Yeah, because I was reading a bit of a book.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I've got a lot of sympathy and...
I tell you what I don't understand. I don't really understand how people can get upset about fox hunting and stuff like that when animals are processed and farmed in the way they are. You know, you don't want to get into that area, but that's what would make me go... vegetarian.
Right, right,
right. The sheer cruelty.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly.
And the scale of it.
There's loads of TV shows being done.
But I do love bacon.
Hugh Fernley Whittingstall did a good one.
That's the only...
factory farming. That's the big drawback, isn't it?
That's the only hatch.
I think that's what stops a lot of people.
Porky chops.
People love porky chops.
A barbecue. Oh, delicious burger.
That's the snag. I don't really know how to balance the two feelings.
I was doing the show I do, Bug, this week. We show pop videos at the BFI. One of the videos was a kind of POV thing, like told very fast about a kind of road movie with this guy having an affair with this dangerous woman. It all ends badly. But the big thing I thought while I was watching it was there's one scene in a restaurant. They get served a burger. And look at that burger, that's delicious. That looks absolutely delicious. And it just stayed with me for the rest of the video. I absolutely love burgers, so I couldn't really go to the vegetarian way of life completely. However, Melanie has done, and she's very pleased about the fact. Mm. And she's extremely pompous about it, and she talks about it in her song. And this song also features... I mean, she was only 23, I think, when she did this track. It's taken from her live album... Leftover Wine is the album. Very good album. And so she's only 23, right? You've got to give us some slack. But check out the intro for this song. I'll just play the intro just quickly before we launch into the song, James. I'll give you a little pause cue. Is that not going to be possible? Will you be able to...
I'll try.
Well, to heck with it. Let's just play the whole thing. But check out the intro. And also, I was thinking I'd be interested, listeners, if you can think... So I was trying to think of other, like, the worst intros to songs ever, right?
Okay.
Spoken intros.
Yeah.
And this has got to be up there for nauseatingness. See if you agree. This is Melanie.
I wrote this song in Columbus, Missouri. I was had a day off, so I wanted to go to the country. And that wasn't very difficult because the country was... Columbus, Missouri is the country. And I walked outside my door, and I saw a big cow. And I said, "Oh, moo... you know, don't you? You know that I don't eat cows." And the cow didn't say anything except, "Melanie." And so I wrote him this song, and I wrote it really for all the cows.
So I thought that was quite nice.
It's a brilliant song, and I love the sentiment as well.
Moo cow.
The moo cow.
Don't you ever look into the sort of blank bovine eyes of a moo cow and get profoundly moved?
Say, "Oh, moo, you know, don't you? I don't eat cows."
I'd like to. I wish I had the courage and strength of character to be a vegetarian.
Yeah.
But I'm too weak.
Yeah. I'm weak as well. I think maybe that's where the Foo Fighters got the title for all the cows. I'd like some corroboration from a Foo Fighters fan, but I think maybe that's where Dave Grohl got the inspiration for that. I'm not sure. And her thesis as well is that she wants nothing dead in her. That's why she doesn't eat animals.
Fair enough.
But if you eat plants, that's like dead.
Well, it depends on your definition of living.
Yeah, well...
I mean, she means probably sentient. Are plants sentient? I'm not sure they are.
Do they have souls?
Do they have souls? Well, you're getting into different areas there, aren't you?
You know, according to... Roald Dahl. Was it the Roald Dahl short story about the plants who screamed?
I don't know.
When they got cut?
It was probably A Tale of the Unexpected, yeah. Or what was that book called? Kiss Kiss. Is it called Kiss Kiss?
Uh-huh.
One of his short story
John Wyndham, I think, has some screaming plant stuff as well.
Well, the Triffids.
The Triffids, obviously,
they're not screaming in a friendly way, though.
No, they're angry. Bad plants.
They're not a good advert for taking care of planties.
Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. It's a little bit of Arctic Monkeys for you. This is Cornerstone after a Steve Lamacq trail. Enjoy. The Arctic Monkeys there with Cornerstone. We're delighted that you've joined us this Saturday morning. This is Adam Buxton.
Hey, this is Joe Cornish.
Yeah, you weren't concentrating, were you?
No, I wasn't.
Just staring off into the distance. It's just gone 10:30 and it's time for the news.
Yes, that's one of my favourite Bowie songs, I think, of all time.
Is it?
Yes.
With Victor Spinetti. Pat
Metheny.
Pat Metheny,
yes. The album to that film is absolutely wonderful.
Is it superlative?
It really is. The Falcon and the Snowman, the film's called, with Timothy Hutton and Sean Penn. It's a very good film.
It was one of my favourite films when it came out that year.
Yes, it's got a beautiful opening track.
Does he do any more singing on the accompanying soundtrack album, David?
No.
That's a disappointment. We got a message from Earl in the week, and Earl said, "I heard this track on a local independent radio station in Sydney, Australia today. The band is called Cold Cave from Philadelphia, I think. The track is called Life Magazine. Jumping out from the first verse of their electro-pop fare was an unintentional wuzza 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 that even the Goblin King himself would have been proud of. Here's a little clip right now."
Yeah.
That's Cold Cave.
Wazza, 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 wazza. That's cool. Wow.
Thanks for that, Earl.
Hey, listen, something else we should point your attention towards, listeners, is an amazing bit of animation that a listener has done to a thing that... Was it on the special bonus podcast, or Adam launched into
this... A couple of weeks back.
Yeah, thing about Simon Callow and Brian Blessed arguing over chess.
Yeah.
And a very talented listener has animated it, and you can find it on YouTube if you search for Callow and Blessed.
Yeah.
Callow
and Blessed, I think, something like that. You'll find.
Have a search for that. And we're going to stick it up on the blog pretty soon. But it's a really genius bit of animation.
He's called Ben Tucker, the guy that did it.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for that. And he's ignored the fact that my Brian Blessed impression is okay. My Simon Callow sounds like Brian Blessed.
It
sounds like two Brian Blesseds in a room.
He's done such a beautiful job, and we're very privileged and flattered that he would bother. And he's made it sound and look really, really excellent.
Yeah, we've even got some 3D stuff sent in to us, which I think we're going to put on the blog as well, aren't we? So do check out the blog this week, because this guy's done an amazing couple of kind of 3D visual stings for the show. And you can just put on your 3D glasses and have a look at them on YouTube, and they are quite extraordinary.
Put on your 3D glasses.
Pop on your glasses.
Has everybody got a pair?
Everyone should, mate.
Every family's got a set of pairs.
If you've not got your 3D sunnies...
Mate,
you're going to need them when Avatar comes out, aren't
you? Exactly.
Everything's gone 3D, mate.
It has, hasn't it?
Yes.
Absolutely, yes it is. So listen, we're going to come back in a second with some bad accent fun.
Oh.
You know we love bad accent fun, and I've got a little slice of bad accent cake to serve to you in a second, but here's some music first. Is this just a normal play or a free play, Adam?
No, this is, I just saw this. James Sterling, our lovely producer, selected this one. It's a song I particularly love, though, by Pavement, Harness Your Hopes, and this was a session track recorded for Radio 1's evening session back in January 1997. Enjoy. One of those wonderful indie bands that have unexpectedly got back together again. I guess it's never unexpected.
Look,
now,
Mummy, there's one of those indie bands that have got back together.
Oh, darling, so it is. It's
Stay
Pavement.
Away, darling.
I never expected the Pavement to reform, but there they are, playing again, Marvelous. 2010. Look, you're scrolling through all your texts.
Oh, God. I rested my mag on the keyboard
on the
and it started doing things.
It was whizzing.
So listen, listeners, you know we love bad accents in films, right?
Yeah, boy.
We love anyone doing a foreign accent in a film when you know it's not their real accent. It's just fun, right?
Peter Sarsgaard in An Education plays an Englishman, and it's quite off-putting because it's pretty good, his accent, but it comes out quite camp.
It's a tough thing to do, you know, and when you think about it, there must be a good living to be made if you were a kind of quite intellectual, academic voice coach to teach the creme de la creme of Hollywood's acting talent exactly how to do these accents, right?
Like some kind of voice coach.
Imagine my surprise and delight when I picked up a copy of the magazine The New Yorker, November the 9th, and it has a massive... You know The New Yorker. It's an excellent magazine. Very good. Also quite pompous and haughty,
like
which is why I like it. And it's got a huge article all about this guy called Tim Monkin. Monick? No, Tim Monick. I said that totally wrong. Tim Monick, yeah? Rhymes with gin and tonic. And he is Hollywood's number one voice coach.
Uh-huh.
He is the man who taught Gerald Butler, who is Scottish, to speak as if he were from New York for the forthcoming film of The Bounty. He taught Shia LaBeouf, who is from Southern California, to speak as if he'd grown up on Long Island for Wall Street 2. He taught Brad Pitt to talk as if he was from Tennessee for Inglourious Basterds. Okay, not the rude word.
Yeah.
He taught Hilary Swank, that's Swank, not the rude word, to speak like Amelia Earhart for her Amelia biopic.
Yeah.
He taught Leo DiCaprio to speak whatever he speaks in Gangs of New York.
Nonsense.
So this is the creme de la creme. He taught Blanchett to speak in a Russian accent for Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Wow.
So this is the guy, right?
Question is, did he... Who else has he taught? Like, did he have anything to do with Ray Winston in The Departed?
Or Don Cheadle in Ocean's 11? Yeah. I don't know. I imagine he might not have got around to Cheadle.
No.
He was busy that week. But what an article.
I've nosed it right.
You know, and they go so in-depth about how he does what he does.
Yeah.
So I thought, this is perfect for Adam and I. This is amazing. And he has various techniques. For instance, he's got an extraordinary library. He records anything off of television. of anyone speaking in a funny accent. So he'll record like foreign generals on CNN, mm-hmm. and he archives them so any actor can come along and pick a particular person,
Ooh.
Base their accent on that person. But some of the other techniques he uses aren't quite so sophisticated.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I quote from the article, Monick has offerings for the eye as well as the ear. He writes an actor's lines in faux phonetic style that he made up by combining elements of actual phonetics with approximations of sounds. So basically, he writes down the phrase that the actor has to say in phonetics.
Yeah.
So that the actor doesn't even have to think. According to this guy, if you read out these weird sentences, you will just immediately have the accent, all right?
A little bit like air, hair, yeah. lair.
Now, luckily, he gives various examples, which I've typed out here.
Yeah.
I'm going to hand them to you, Adam Buxton.
Okay.
You have to read them out, and we'll see whether it works, whether you say the accent, right?
All right, then.
So the first line, and Adam hasn't seen these lines before.
And obviously you haven't indicated what the accent is.
Oh, I kind of have. Do you want me to fold that? Or should I fold that back so you don't know what accent that is?
Yeah.
Okay. So this first line is one of Brad Pitt's lines from Inglourious Basterds.
Okay.
So Adam's going to read this out phonetically. Flip it over.
Okay. My name is Lieutenant Aldorain, and I'm putting together a spatial team. And I need me 8 soldiers.
Now, what's actually written on that? I mean, that's quite a long-winded one.
That's Tennessee, that accent. My name is Lieutenant Aldorain, and I'm putting together a spatial team. And I need me 8 soldiers.
So how's it spelled? The guy spelt it, you know, Ma is M-A-H. Lieutenant is L-O-O-T-I-N-N-U-N-T.
Lieutenant.
You know what? So he's writing it totally phonetically. Try this one. This is a line that Matt Damon used in order to sound South African in the forthcoming film Invictus.
Ah.
Yeah? So this should, if Adam reads this phonetically, he should just sound perfectly South African.
It's a Mulletree University. It's a Mulletree University.
It's a Mulletree. It's a military university.
Oh, Mull. It's a Mulletree.
It's a Mulletree University. Try this one. This is for Gerard Butler in The Bounty. And this is supposed to make you sound like you're from New York.
Nah, does miserable as Ahimehid her believe you.
Come on,
me.
Give me that one back. I can do that one. Nada's miserable as he may... Oh, no, that's impossible.
That's absolutely impossible.
No wonder these people are speaking with really bad accents.
Nada's miserable as he mehid her.
Okay, listen, this is possibly a tiny bit alienating for the listener at home because you can't see what we're seeing written down, but here's a simple one. Like, if you've got a pad and a piece of paper, if you write down the words go a hiddens mallet, go a hiddens mallet. According to this guy, when you say go a hiddens mallet, you're saying go ahead and smell it in a South African accent.
Go a hiddens mallet. Go a hiddens mallet. Go a hiddens mallet.
Yeah, here's another one. Here's another. This is Hollywood's top accent coach.
Air, hair, lair.
And here's a final one. This is another South African one. And if you write down Beck, B-E-C-K, Tusa, T-O-O-S-A, oh, I can't even bother to spell the whole thing, Thefri, T-H-E-F-F-R-E, car.
Bektusa Thefrika.
Yes!
Hey, that's
see,
quite
that
good! Bektusa Thefrika. Bektusa Thefrika.
You know, you're saying it with a slight, yeah. Try saying it with no accent at all.
Bektusa Thefrika. That was with no accent. That's
good. That's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think it would be possible to think of other phonetic phrases that just, without any effort, make you sound foreign?
Of course. This guy's built a whole career on it.
Isn't that good?
Well, air, hair, lair is the one that makes you sound posh, obviously, right?
Air, hair, lair.
Yeah. You write down the words
air, are there any others?
Hair, and lair. Air, hair, lair.
Bektusa Thefrika.
You see, you're doing it as well. That's good. We'd like to hear any more, though, if you've got them, listeners. You've got a free play right now, though, Joe.
Yeah,
right?
This is some orange juice. This is out for the count.
This is the voice of the big British castle. It is the top of the hour. Ooh, that's wonderful. I got so bored with the last hour. I'm glad it's gone. Now here's the new one. fun, it's exciting, and it's new. How do you do?
How do you do? Nice to be with you, listeners. This is Adam.
Hello, this is Joe. getting quicker, right?
Yeah, a little bit quicker.
My reactions.
Not like when we introduced Madness at the Camden Crawl.
No, I didn't like that.
Hi, this is Adam. Hey, all right. So you guys are probably a bit bored. That was your response.
You've never forgotten that.
It was funny.
Have I told you about my never again list?
No.
Have I told you about that? I've got a list on my office wall. It says never again.
Uh-huh.
And
introduce Madness.
Number one is introduce live bands. Number two is appear on panel shows.
Yeah.
Number three is turn on Christmas lights. Stella McCartney's shop.
Never again. You haven't done it once, though.
Yeah, I know.
You're a fool. You'll be kicking yourself one day. Absolutely kicking yourself. Or I'll be kicking
when you're off on holiday.
I'll be kicking
with the McCartneys.
Can't believe it. Anyway, have you been to church recently?
No.
When was the last time you did a bit of hymn singing?
Probably at a friend's funeral.
Because whether you're religious or not, right, once in a while you find yourself in an environment where hymns are being sung, whether it's Christmas or a wedding or a funeral or whatever the occasion happens to be. I was at an assembly at my children's school this week, and they like to sing a few hymns there and stuff. But what do you do if you're in a situation where you're completely unfamiliar with the tune of the hymn or the hymn itself? Do you do a sort of John Redwood and bluff your way through it? You remember when he was Welsh secretary and he couldn't remember the Welsh national anthem? And he was just shaking his head and kind of mumbling the words a little bit with a smile. Or do you not even bother? Like, I didn't even bother. When I heard the hymn coming on at my children's school, I just put the hymn sheet down because I thought, where do I start? There's no way.
Do you know what I do?
What?
I guess the melody and belt it out.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
No. But that would be a thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just guess it. And hell, you know, you're in a church.
Right.
So you're going to be forgiven, turn the other cheek. Just sing really loudly and guess where it's going to go. Try and predict it. There are some people that do that anyway. Well, this is another story, but my girlfriend has a habit. If a record comes along on the radio and it's a new record and I know she's never heard it before, she'll start, let the because the
my wife does that as well.
As if she knows how it's going to go.
Is that a lady thing?
It's a lady thing. They just love music.
They love to sing along with things, don't they?
Yeah.
The ladies.
If they don't know what it's...
Do I ever come back to you? They're just guessing where it's going to go because they just love music.
But it's definitely a similar situation in a church, and it's more sort of, you know, revealing, isn't it? It's more exposed.
Right.
Because there's people all around you and there's an atmosphere of, you know, you've got to conform to the ritual.
Well, I was checking out the other parents. Most of them were having a stab, it has to be said.
Was this in a church or in the school?
No,
hall?
Just in the assembly hall.
Okay.
The children all sang beautifully. I think they'd sung the hymn many times before, so they were all au fait with the thing. I didn't know where to start. I just completely bottled it. But I thought you, Joe Cornish, might like to have a go, because I got out my digital camera and I recorded a couple of verses and a chorus.
Nice.
So I have the hymn sheet here that we were given.
Adam's given me a copy of the hymn sheet.
And there'll be a couple of bars before you come in.
This is written by Graham Kendrick, who was born in 1950. What's it called, this hymn?
It is called Shine, Jesus, Shine.
Ah.
I think, and I've never heard this one before, ever. So see how you get on.
What you're expecting me to sing along as if I'm in church and you're going to play the backing track?
Exactly. We'll just do one verse in the chorus, okay? And here's the Children of Town Close School in Norwich singing.
Consume all my darkness. Shine on me, me. Shine on me.
Chorus.
Shine, Jesus, shine. This lamp with the Father's glory. Blaze, Spirit, blaze.
Blaze.
Hearts on fire.
Are you sure this is about Jesus?
With grace and mercy.
Oh, way off.
Send forth your word, Lord, and let there be light.
That's how you do it. You go for the grandstand. Very good. That was a good effort. Thanks. You did pretty well on there, on the whole. You
that sounds slightly evangelical. It sounds very contemporary.
Yeah.
Know, a little bit funky.
It's a nice track. It's yes, it's in between there.
Flow, river, flow, flood the nations. Mm-hmm. Oh, with grace and mercy, that's all right.
Yeah.
Blaze, spirit, blaze, set our hearts on fire. It almost sounds too contemporary.
Sounds like Bon Jovi, doesn't it?
It just sounds like... Yeah, God's,
but no, good effort.
Sounds
there.
Like God's having a smoke and then flooding places.
No, he doesn't do that kind of thing. I can't wait to go to church with you. I think you'd do a great job.
Thanks a lot. Someone was suggesting that over Christmas, you know, obviously the Stephen phenomenon has died down a bit.
Feast of Stephen.
Become a bit tiresome. Yeah, did you read that email?
Yeah.
That this Christmas we could revive the Stephen thing, but if you're in church and you sing Good King Wenceslas...
Yeah, Good King Wenceslas. I even did a jingle for the Christmas show last year with Good King Wenceslas.
On the Feast of Stephen! Yeah?
Yeah, we'll be digging that one out for Christmas
An
this
ecclesiastical
year.
Ecclesiastical Stephen.
Absolutely. Here's some Arcade Fire right now, speaking of kind of rousing spiritual music. This is Intervention. Wow, about a minute from the end, the sun came out and was shining very brightly through the windows there in the big British castle. And it was a very spiritual and moving moment with the Arcade Fire there singing Intervention.
Mm.
That's my album of the year.
I thought you said the other one was your album.
I'm joking. That came out last year, I think.
Album of the year, yes.
2 years ago, was it? Oh, my lordy. Time is flying at a ridiculous pace now. Should we have the Text the Nation jingle, James? Let's have the rock one. Yeah, bit of credit for Lee Henman, who put together the backing track for that.
There you go, you get backing tracks sent in.
Happens once in a blue moon, doesn't it?
Only happened to me once. Twice. Three times.
Twice. Yeah. A lady.
Yeah, so Text the Nation is all about psychic things that happen that make you think you're psychic. And we were trying to go for a kind of idiotic angle. You know, people who do that in an idiotic way.
You say this, what were you imagining we were going to get?
I don't know. I thought just we'd get idiots behaving, you know, with really tenuous reasons why they were psychic. Uh-huh. But the truth is, a lot of people genuinely do.
Sure they do.
Think they're psychic.
It's a serious thing. It's
a lot of coincidences happen.
It's one of the ultimate fantasies you have when you're a child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That maybe you're psychic and you have psychic abilities. Don't you think? Like with me, it was a close thing between being bionic and being psychic.
Yeah.
I very much wanted to be bionic.
But you thought you possibly were psychic.
I mean,
you don't have to have any visible robot parts to be psychic.
Exactly. Because I thought, I don't know if I can go through with the accident and then the reconstruction for the bionics. But psychic, you're born with that.
Premonitions? Have you ever had any premonitions?
Never.
You've never dreamt something that then happened?
Not a one.
Really?
Nothing.
Do you ever have... Because déjà vu can sometimes feed into that, can't it?
Right, when you're a bit tired.
You can think, man, I've dreamt this.
Yes, that's your mind playing tricks on you, though, isn't
it? Is it, though?
I think so.
Or is it my mind playing tricks on you?
Here's a message right now. This was posted on our blog by Joe, and he says... Dear Cornballs and Count Buckules, I was once reading the book Never Trust a Rabbit by the League of Gentlemen's Jeremy Dyson on London's The Tube. Jeremy is the one that never appears on the telly, but as a bit of a geek, I knew what he looked like. So imagine my surprise when I looked up to see the man opposite me on the tube was Jeremy Dyson. I coughed loudly and flashed the cover of his book at him, and he looked up, smiled, and he said to me, "That literally never happens." He then offered to sign the book, and we had a little chat. Sadly, this psychic story ends on a slightly sour note, as we both changed at Oxford Circus and went on the same Victoria Line platform and boarded the same northbound tube.
Oh,
turns out we live really close to each other now. And what could have been a nice story for both of us is a slightly creepy one for him, as he thought I'd followed him home. I had to pretend to tie my non-existent shoelaces to allow him to run away. Am I psychic? Do I win a prize?
In what way would that be psychic, though? That would be the power to attract a person you're thinking about or whose work you're consuming towards you physically.
Yeah, Yeah, your aura is so powerful that
you just magnetically pull that person.
You're reading the Da Vinci Code and suddenly there's Dan Brown. He's been sucked into your universe.
Imagine.
And you can ask him questions about Tom Hanks.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
That kind of thing.
Have you got any more?
Yes, I've got one more. Here's one from Joff in Lyme Regis.
Joff?
Yeah.
You sure it's not Jeff?
Well, J-O-F-F. What are you reckoning?
That's a Joff,
isn't
it?
That's a Joff, yeah.
Yeah.
Joff in Lyme Regis.
Do you think it's Roland Joffe, the director of The Killing Fields?
Because then he would have put Joffles.
Joffles, of course he would.
He says, "Dear Adam and Joe, I must tell you about my psychic abilities. About 5 years ago, I was driving in my car and I put on... and put on my latest car boot purchase, the CD Ragga Greats, the Ace of Base song, All That She Wants, brackets is another baby, came on and I quickly turned it off. Because my girlfriend did want another baby, and I didn't.
Oh, no.
Imagine my horror then when the radio kicked in and the same song was playing.
No,
in a trice, I was on the phone to Dr. Snippington, and in a few weeks, I was safely neutralized. Phew, then we split up. That was the only psychic experience.
What a roller coaster
I've ever had, wow. But it was enough. That's from Joff. Oh, God.
Wow, I can't get my head around that. That's so.
1 minute it's strange. Ace of Base, next minute it's Dr. Snippington.
I mean, that's brilliantly illustrated in the film The Tall Guy, right?
Yeah.
Which is quite an old film now that kids probably won't know. It's fallen out of circulation a bit, but it's Mel Smith, and directed by Mel Smith, written by Richard Curtis, starring Jeff Goldblum.
Love it. And Emma Thompson.
And they fall out of love, and then every time there's a sequence where every time he turns on the radio, another love song is playing. It's quite good, but that happens quite a lot, doesn't it? I mean, that would be another good Text the Nation, like songs or bits of pop culture that you can never listen to or watch again because they bring back kind of awkward,
the memories, or weird memories, potent, associations.
Or if you're having some kind of issue between you and your partner or a friend, it's weird how suddenly everything you listen to will suddenly seem to be talking about that very issue.
It all seems relevant, right?
Yeah, and sometimes in a way that like says things out loud that you don't want said.
That's the hallmark of a brilliant bit of music or film or whatever it happens to be, though, is that it absorbs all the things you bring to it.
Yes.
Right?
And, it's like a kind of information black hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, they suck things in towards them, don't they?
It's exactly like an information black hole, Dr. Hawkins, yes.
Thank you.
Here's Ian Brown with Just Like You. I'm living fart today. That's what he says. Ian Brown with Just Like You. Sounds a little Christmassy, that track, as well. I love Christmas. It's coming up soon. We're going to be in December, not in June. Christmas time is the time for cheer. Come over here and join me. Yeah.
We were bemoaning that here in London they've put Christmas lights up, and every year they get even more sponsified.
Oh, yeah.
And this year it's all about Robert Zemeckis' motion capture version of A Christmas Carol starring Jim Carrey.
Which is supposed to be good.
But there's a point at which Christmas lights stop being Christmas lights and are just illuminated adverts.
Is there any country in the world that does it quite so heavily as we do in London Town and Oxford
If you
Street?
Live in a foreign city, is there any other capital that just has its Christmas lights purely advertising?
Because I tell you this, my friend, we don't do that in Paris.
They wouldn't do that in Paris, would they? Would they? Maybe they would. I don't know. They might on the Champs-Élysées.
Maybe.
But I don't think they do. I don't think they do. It's broken Britain. Corporate Britain.
And I tell you, they don't do it in New York either, I don't think.
Well, the Thanksgiving parade is quite heavily sponsored, isn't it?
But yeah, but then
I don't think the permanent lights.
That's the way to do it. You have a parade. The
Macy's
parade.
Because they used to just have, like, it would be... you know, Aladdin themed or something, and then they wouldn't like have Aladdin on everything. They'd have some like Christmassy, you know, magic carpets, and they try and make it, you know, non-branded.
Yeah,
but now they've just dropped that pretense. It's as if Britain is just run by four major corporations.
Yeah, that's your theory.
That's
that
my
you're
theory. It's not the theory
to.
Of the Big British Castle.
No, that's not. That's
it feels
not endorsed
that way sometimes,
the
doesn't it?
Sometimes it does. It's all about making the money, isn't it?
Mm.
And then the rest of the Oxford Street is covered with those kind of spider's webs with what looks like gob on them.
That's very Christmassy. That's, people love to gob on spider's webs at Christmas.
You know
Come
I mean?
On, whole families pop and trudge through the snow, find a spider's web. Oh, Oh, that one's. Oh, that spider's web's too weak. It's collapsed. Oh, but this one's holding the gob really well. That's very Christmassy.
Have you seen the holidays are coming? Are they? Is that back on TV yet?
What, the new? Is that that's a fizzy drink?
Coca-Cola, isn't it? Yeah, with the trucks all rumbling into town.
Oh, with the weird, creepy animated people.
It's a different one. Creepy Santa is a different bit.
I was going to say though, you want to see some good, genuine Christmas lights? Then just if you're in London, just pop to Carnaby Street because they're proper ones.
Really? Have they got
nice
ones?
Non-sponsored. Yeah, they're really lovely.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Have they got fairies there? There's loads of fairies, Adam. All over the pavement, drunk.
Wearing winkle pickers.
Yes.
Okay, here's a free play for you, listeners. You can fire this one off right now, James. And let me tell you that this is it's quite a long one, so that's why we're firing it off, because we want to play the whole thing. This is Van Morrison.
It's 11 minutes.
It's 11 minutes long, and it's called...
Are we going to play it all?
The Back Room. Well, the thing is that... Sorry to talk over the beginning of it, listeners.
Oh,
but my
favorite DJ, no.
My favorite bit is DJ Heresy. My favorite bit is at the end where he starts chatting and he starts saying to his hipster friends, "What time is it?" I'd say, "Baby, what time is it? What time is it?" "It's 4:30. He just sort of answers.
We got to sit through 11 minutes to get.
It's
to
a
that.
Good song
it's a good
as
song.
Well
good.
As that.
Let's do it.
Here he is. It's 4:30. It's not 4:30. It's coming up to 11:30 here on BBC Six Music. Joe, have you seen the posters around town for the new Bon Jovi tour?
Yeah, I think I have. Yeah, there's certainly... there was a big hoo-ha about them on the Awful X Factor,
hoo-ha.
Wasn't there, the
That's
other
right.
Day?
They were plugging the thing, and they've got a new album out as well, which is supposed to be rubbish.
I love that kind of album.
Rubbish. Have you got any rubbish albums? Yes, we do. You might like the new Bon Jovi one. And have you checked out the new Robbie Williams album? Hey, come on.
Hey.
That's supposed to be brilliant.
Yes.
He's got Trevor Horn in to help him do the knob twiddling.
Sure, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's probably very good. So the Bon Jovi tour is called the There Goes the Neighbourhood Tour.
Right. Yes, because some middle-aged men, some very rich
exactly.
middle-aged men have moved in.
What's going to happen?
There goes the neighbourhood.
What's the worst
it's
that's going to happen?
52-year-old man.
John Bon Jovi's going to hobble over and nick your cocoa.
Friends. Hey oh, there. Next. A really attractive middle-aged man.
That's right. Arrived.
Excuse me. I was wondering if I could borrow a cup of sugar.
Wait. Oh, he's run off with the sugar. Damn him. He's taken way too much sugar.
He stepped on the very edge of the lawn and crushed four blades of grass.
And there goes the neighbourhood.
Punks.
I can't believe it. Those damn punks in their snakeskin boots. They've crushed all my... azaleas.
Turn down that middle of the road rock. It's slightly annoying.
It's slightly annoying. It's not too bad. I could listen to the end of this one.
It's basically innocuous and I can't really tell it apart from the traffic noise and ambience. But turn it down.
I like the ones from Slippery When Wet. Did they do Slippery When Wet?
James is saying yes.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? Do you remember though, people used to love them when we were at school. What was the one, the big... one that they kept on playing at that party we went to. That's not a very
don't
good...
remember.
Oh, about the... She was a fast machine. She kept her motor clean. That's not even Bon Jovi, is it? That's someone else. That's which one?
AC/DC.
That's AC/DC.
They're a proper band, aren't they? Are, or slightly more proper.
But then... Oh, no, she shook me all night long. That's Bon Jovi, isn't it? That's more AC/DC. Maybe I've got Bon Jovi confused with AC/DC just in my mind. Sorry about that, listeners. It's exactly 11:30 and time for the news. That's young Bob with I Want You. If you're up for some old Bob, he is on Six Music this Sunday night at midnight. His old-time theme time radio thing is on, and it's all about lies. Big, fat lies. Little lies, white lies. That kind of thing with me, Bob Dylan.
You can still smell him, can't you? I mean, even though he hasn't been in the studio for a while, you can still smell him.
You know, you can smell him, and there's also residue that you can
see. You can see the marks on the carpet. We're not
Plus,
talking about Dylan.
Not Dylan. We're talking about our little furry friend.
Boggins,
also,
the BBC dog.
Also, you know, he was rolling about in mud and, I think, poo, and he's wiped it all over the sides of the studio.
I mean, that's
as
one
well.
Of the problems, isn't it? Because he's so affectionate, mm-hmm. but it's not the affection that lingers.
It's the stink.
It's the
stench,
stinkiness.
And it's the hairs as well. And he was scampering around in the rain earlier on as well. And so he scampered his paws absolutely everywhere. And earlier on, he tried to bite and lick my face.
So much stuff, I mean, and now falls off him, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like he's shedding all the time, but he's so sweet.
He's absolutely charming.
He's very
sweet.
It's just
tricky to get close to him.
The raging debate about whether Boggins should be humanely killed.
If you're a new listener, we're just, you know, mooting that this fictional dog might be fictionally killed because, well, killed is too strong, isn't it? Like put down, terminated. Just because we're just not sure about the fictional quality of his fictional life.
A lot of listeners find the sound of Boggins when he does scamper into the studio absolutely nauseating and irritating. And so they would like him to be dealt with in some kind of very final way.
Luca Van Dresch has written in saying, please don't kill Boggins. He's one of the funniest additions to your show. Not that your show wouldn't be good without him, as it would still be the funniest podcast out there apart from the Ricky Gervais podcast and maybe the Answer Me This podcast. But please don't kill Boggins.
Thanks for the qualified praise there.
And here's, can I read you one more?
Sure.
We've got Ree Boggins from Thomas Stephen. And I like this one because it's really blunt. love the show, guys. Really enjoyed the place-filling Temporific podcast. But Adam, please stop doing Boggins. It's just embarrassing. Thomas Stephen.
What does he mean, doing him?
That's just really, I don't know. That's a bit revolting. But that's really sort of stabby, that one, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's very, like a little sharp verbal stiletto blade.
Instead of shaking his head and saying,
jabbed into your ribs.
Is what he's basically saying. But to put the other side of the argument, here's a message from James McConville. And he says, hello, Adam and Joe, 2! Me and my 7-year-old son, Jerry, live in Detroit in the United States, where Liverpool expats, and we're normally obedient Slack Squadron members, i.e. podcast listeners. However, our elegance has been shaken to the core by High Command's order to put down Boggins, the Black Squadron mascot. So he's adopted him as a Black Squadron mascot there. My son has the official word on this. Please listen to the attached file. And this is what James sent.
I don't want Boggins to put down, or else I'm not going to listen to your show again. Bye-bye. Yeah.
That is his 7-year-old son, Jerry McConville, there, who's got the proper
That's
United
quite a
States
forceful argument, isn't it?
Accent.
Would we, you know, could you put him down now that we've heard that?
A little 7-year-old, a plea from a 7-year-old
of a child.
Boy. Yeah. I mean, that's harsh, isn't it?
I've thought about it, yes.
The other thing is that the musical community are talented musical listeners have come out in force. I say in force. We've had 3 songs sent to us. One song is a kind of a cut-up featuring samples of Boggins set to music, which we'll put on our blog. And then we've had a couple of original compositions that have been sent to us.
Do you think it's fair to say that we're sort of surprised and excited by the quantity and level of feeling about the fictional termination of Boggins?
Well, it's a dog-loving nation, isn't it, the United Kingdom?
Yeah.
So it's not a total surprise to me.
Really?
And plus, he's very sweet.
He is very sweet, but he's also really revolting.
He's revolting.
And as much as we get an enormous amount of positive correspondence about Boggins, we get an avalanche of hate.
It is true, actually.
A tsunami
lethal
venom.
We don't generally try to court hatred.
Listen,
as a duo.
Like,
but
for instance, this guy, Greg, has listed the 10 ways he would like fictional Boggins to be fictionally killed. Did you
read that?
And some of it's so extreme I can't read it out. Number 2 is machine gun firing squad.
That's one of the more tame ones.
Number 3 is stabbed with an umbrella.
Here's a message right now, though, from Jim Stoughton. Jim's a talented illustrator. He's been in touch with the show before. And he says, dear Adam and Joe, my girlfriend and I really like Boggins. Neither of us want to hear of his death. We want him to stick around for a very long time. So I've written a song to help Boggins stay alive. It's called Save Boggins. Let's hear a few seconds of the song right now. We'll put the full thing on the blog this week, though.
Save Boggins. Everyone clap your hands. He's a lovely, slobbery creature. Got a problem with his glands. Save Boggins. Everyone stomp your feet.
That's very wonderful. We played a whole thing, but we've got more clips to play you.
Exactly. We've got another song. Thank you very much indeed for that one, Jim. So that's a pro-Boggins song. And here's another pro one. I mean, so far we haven't got any
anti-Boggins song
material. This is another very moving musical plea to save the little chap from Tom Taylor, also calling himself the Barefoot Busker. And he says, dear Count Buckley's and Dr. Sexy MD, many thanks for all the years of entertainative programming. You're welcome. I'm a long-time listener, first-time writer. I felt compelled to throw in my hat to the Boggins ring. I recently caught up on the last few podcasts and became painfully aware of the fracture in the psyche of the Adam and Joe Show listenership.
Very true, very well put.
Yeah, Boggins is caught in the middle of a struggle beyond his comprehension. So after having a little wee...
Boggins doesn't comprehend much.
I felt as if I was a vessel for his voice. He's written Wuzza as well. I felt I was a vessel for his voice to speak through. I've composed this song in order that the issue of his impending execution may be openly explored. Thank you very much, Tom. Let's have a listen to the first verse and chorus of your song, Save Boggins.
Boggins is a door with a number of floors. You got his huge sloppy nose and his four manky paws, but if you'd seen this flea ridden mutt, you'd know that he lives for his moment shared with Adam and Joe. Don't put him down, let him stick around. Don't take Boggins out of my life. Even though his stench is quite rife,
is this one going to go on the blog as well?
Yeah, we'll put the whole version.
Yeah. This is pretty good, this song.
It's really good. He goes into a little impression of Boggins.
Really impassioned.
Here, listen to his quick impression.
Hello. Hello, Boggins, you all right?
I done a poo and I wrote in it.
No, that's all right. Don't worry about it.
That's a brilliant impression as well, and a fantastic song. Thank you so much, Tom Taylor. I checked out his music on his MySpace site, and it's very good as well.
He's a good singer.
The Barefoot Busker. And yeah, we'll put the full versions of all of those on the blog this week, so get involved. And if you want to put the case for the other side, the execution of Boggins...
Musically. That would be interesting. Doesn't that one switch around at the end?
Oh,
the one we just heard, yeah. If you listen through after the chit-chat, it becomes a little less supportive.
It becomes a kind of a deadly fantasy, yeah.
And certain people are putting around the idea that Boggins is Adam doing a voice.
Don't know what that's about.
And, you know, if that was the case, he could just be here now, for instance. I mean, it would be good if he was here now, but you'll notice he's not.
No.
So we can't just summon him up. In a contrived way, so...
I'm looking forward to Channel 4's forthcoming The Execution of Boggins.
Yes.
Fictional drama.
Yes.
Confusing drama. Putting both sides.
Pure hate-driven programming.
Prurient programming. Yep. Anyway, here's Jamie T right now with The Man's Machine. Jack Bauer, is he going on about that? That's Jamie T and The Man's Machine. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. We've only got, like, 11 minutes before Liz Kershaw comes and... is your guide for the rest of the afternoon here at BBC Six Music?
Yeah, but I've got a free play coming up.
Have you?
But I was just going to say, I forgot to say earlier when I played some orange juice as a free play.
I was good to hear that orange juice, man.
We love orange juice. We're huge fans. And I'm concerned that you can't walk into any CD shop in Britain and buy the original orange juice albums. What were their albums called? There's like Texas Fever was an EP. Rip It Up, The Orange Juice, You Can't Hide Your Love Forever. Like every Orange Juice album is amazingly good, and there are all sorts of little hidden gems that you can't get on the compilations, which seem to be all that's available. There's sort of three best of compilations, the Glasgow School and the Best of Orange Juice, but you can't get reissues of the original albums, and that seems like madness to me.
It is madness. I bought You Can't Hide Your Love Forever on a Japanese import.
Really?
Some good...
You have to pay £40 for a new or used copy of You Can't Hide Your Love Forever in Britain.
Yeah, that's the one with the dolphins on the front.
Yeah, and like most reasonable artists, record companies have released every single... permutation of great albums, haven't they, with sort of studio tracks and different mixes and all remastered.
You would think they would definitely do Orange Juice because they've been so influential and all those kind of...
Is there a rights thing? Maybe someone, if someone knows, they could tell us what the deal is.
Right, that's sometimes is the case. And sometimes what bands do to get out of that is they go and they re-record the whole album. You know what I mean?
Right.
But obviously it sounds slightly different.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would
no,
we?
No, I mean, Camper Van Beethoven did that, and they released a whole load of tracks, but they re-recorded them very faithfully, like years after they originally did them, in order to get out of the legal wrangles they had with releasing them on a compilation.
Hmm.
That's fine. Interesting.
Well, anyway, Adam,
I could talk about rights all afternoon.
It's been really nice chatting.
I don't know anything about the subject.
I've got to go now.
I do love talking about it. Are you sure you have to go right now?
Yeah, no, I do have to go.
There's
but
a couple
listen,
of other rights-based issues that I wanted to go through with you,
Let's talk about this another time.
Can we not talk about intellectual property for a while?
If that's okay, I've just got to slip off now.
I do find it very fascinating.
Listen, have
quite a fascinating
great
area.
Christmas and everything.
It's an absolute minefield.
Here's Nice and Smooth.
Sure you have to go?
Greg Nice and Smooth
Jimmy Smooth.
With a track called Hip Hop Junkies.
Revolting. Absolutely revolting stuff there.
You chose that?
By Joe Cornish.
Oh, me. I'm revolting.
Bit of Partridge Family samplage going on in there as well. And we've had a message from a few people about the orange juice situation.
Yeah, they're saying, for instance, Paul Richards has said Domino Records have recently bought the rights to Orange Juice's back catalogue and are releasing their albums next year.
That's good news.
That's exciting, isn't it? Sounds like there's a lovely juicy box set.
A lovely juicy box set. Oh, I'd love it. You know what? I've run out of juicy box sets at the moment. I'm talking DVDs right now. This is why I'm so excited about the imminent return of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Because me and my wife have run out of boxes.
Right.
It's a thing that happens if you've got children. I'm sure a lot of parents can relate to this. You know, you get to the end of the day and you haven't really got the energy to even scan through the TV listings because you just think, no, definitely not. And all you want is the warmth and familiarity of some episodic telly on a DVD. Oh, because if you get to the end and you're still not absolutely exhausted, you can watch another one right then. You can stick another one on. And if you're feeling crazy or maybe having friends around, then you can watch 5 in a row. You know?
I don't know, no.
No, you're not part of that whole world,
awful.
Are you? What's your weekend got in store?
Movies!
For you? Movies, what are you going to see?
I've got lots of stuff.
You're going to be projecting them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I haven't projected anything for a while because as soon as I start getting the old bit of cardboard out and sticking it on the mantelpiece, my wife starts sighing and going, can't we just watch it on the TV?
Divorce.
Yeah, I reckon.
That would be, for me, grounds for divorce.
I think so. But I've tried to put it to the back of my mind and be reasonable about it. That's it, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Liz Kershaw is coming up. Don't forget to download the podcast on Monday evening. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful week. Take care.
Yeah, thanks to everybody who's texted and emailed. And please continue sending in your emails only during the week. That would be great, especially for Text the Nation.
Retro Text the Nation next week. Keep those psychic stories coming in. Here's the Pixies right now with Bone Machine.
We'll see you next
week. Have a wonderful week. Bye.
Bye.